Hanukkah has a very unique aspect to it. We have the classical mitzvah, which is family-oriented, is the Korban Pesach. Selavay Sovis, Selabois. However, each person has to participate themselves in the Korban Pesach. It's organized by a family, but each person has to eat of the Korban Pesach. In Hanukkah, we find a different dimension of a family celebration, which I don't know any other place in the halacha that we find. Very unique. Hanukkah, we have a lot of Ner Ishu Beisai, that the baseline halacha of Hanukkah is fulfilled. If one person in the household lights one candle, everyone in the bayis fulfills the mitzvah. The individual initiative that each person should light, it's extra credit to Mahadrin, and Mahadrin, depending on the lactosis and the Ramah, etc. But the basic chiyuv is one chiyuv of the entire bayis. And that, as I said, I do not know any parallel for that in the halacha. Korban Pesach, as I mentioned, celebrates over celebrates, but each person has to participate himself. So, Ner Hanukkah is a very unique aspect to it. A very unique aspect. Shaila is what is this? Perhaps the answer lies, perhaps, that if we examine the various artifacts of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, is something very peculiar. What was contained, right, in the building part of the Beis HaMikdash, not in the exterior portions, but in the building part, in the Heichal. So you had a Kodesh and a Kodesh Kadosh. What was in that building? So we had Mizbeach Hazov, who brought the Ketores. We had a Menorah outside the Kotri Kotri, and the Shulchan itself, and Menorah Midorah. And then in the Kotri Kotri itself, we had the Ark. Those were the vessels, the artifacts that were found in the Heichal. Now, what's surprising in all of this, it is, what does the Aron symbolize? Aron symbolizes Torah. What does the Menorah symbolize? Right, Gemara says, "Haroitzel hachkim." If you wish to become wise in Torah, yadkim. Sham Menorah b'dorom. Dorom represents chokhmah. Chokhmah satayr. The Shulchan represents Parnassah. Haroitz of Ahasha, Yatzim. That's why it has Lechem on it. It's a bracha in the practical world. Lechem. The Neira is a bracha of Ruchnias. So why of the very small number of artifacts found in the Heichal, two of them represent the Torah? And one's in the Kotche Kotche, and one's outside the Kotche Kotche in the Heichal. Very peculiar. And I think that the answer is that Torah is in two different dimensions. There are different dimensions to Torah. There's Limud HaTorah, and there's the Lelamed, the teaching of Torah. As we say in the Tefillah, there's Lumayd Lelamed. Torah Lishma encompasses both, as the Gemara says in Sukkot. What's Torah's Chesed? V'chiyesh Torah Shal Chesed v'Torah She'ino Shal Chesed? So Torah Shal Chesed is Torah Lishma, and the Gemara says, The Yiboy Seva, Torah Lolami, Torah to teach to others. So there are dimensions of Lishma in the learning and in the teaching of Torah. But they're different. Limud HaTorah takes place in an environment of the strictest degree of Torah. It should be totally untainted. It's to be pure. We put it behind barriers of kotche kotche to keep it untainted. When we learn Torah, we have to strive to be a place which is untainted by any other influences. The most pristine environment that we can create. The menorah represents the lelamed, the hoyer to bring the light of Torah to others. The light of Torah we can't lock up in the kotche kotche. The light of Torah we have to bring to wherever Klal Yisrael is. So that was the godless of Shmuel HaNovi. Shmuel was on the road constantly. He didn't sit back in Yerushalayim. He was on the road. He traveled from place to place throughout the length and breadth of Eretz Yisrael to inspire the people. To bring Torah to where the people are. That you can't lock up in the kotche kotche. The symbol, the abiding symbol of Hanukkah is the menorah. It's the light of Torah. As we know, the Levush writes that Haman, in our times Hitler, Yimach Shemo, was similar. They had a racial agenda to kill all the Jews. They had little concern. If you had religion, you didn't have religion. If you had long ago given up your religion and traded it in for a different one, Lahashmi Larug Laabit Awalaina. Chanukah, the Chashmonaim or the Yevonim were closer to the communists. Communists, by and large, did not have a racial agenda to murder Jews. They just wanted everyone to say Ani Maamin in the communist state, in the Stalinist state. If you said Ani Maamin and bow down to them, that's it, you were fine, you were kosher. You could be all the way up to the head of the secret police. What was his name? Lev. No, the one that was in Stalin's time, that survived all the way through the whole Stalinist era. His name was Lazar Moshe, Kaganovich, yeah. Kaganovich, Lazar Moshe Kaganovich. He didn't die too many years ago. Really? Yeah, after the fall of the Soviet Union, he made it all the way through, from end to end. He was very reviled by even the communists. But if you went with the flow, you had a place. The Yevonim were the same way. The Yevonim had no racial interests. They had the Shita, the philosophy. You accepted the Shita, you were fine. So the struggle was not Jews in physical survival, but spiritual survival under those circumstances. That's why the menorah, which represents Torah, that's the symbol of Hanukkah. It's why the Nes had to take place there. This is the symbol of the Lahore, the light of Torah, to light up the darkness of the gods. And I think that's the pshat of Ner Ishu Beisai. The Rambam writes, the Novi Yirmiya states, that Miyiten Li Malon Orchem, that if I had a place to run away from Klal Yisrael, an inn to stay in the Midbar, Ve'ezvo Asami, run off to the Midbar, to know the Yom Yisrael. So the Rambam writes that if a Jew is challenged and he's not allowed to live his spiritual life, Yidneini v'amidbar d'navi yisad melein archem. Ezva asami. Let me go in isolation in a midbar. I have some place, some little roof over my head. Melein archem. Ezva asami. So the Rambam writes in the Yad that if a person lives at a time that they don't let him keep Torah, he should run away to the midbar. He shouldn't stay in society. The Rambam was talking about very real things in his time. There was tremendous persecution of the Jews, as we know, with the Geras Taman. And the Rambam himself had a very tumultuous life because of, to be politically incorrect, fundamentalist Muslims. The world hasn't changed much in close to 1,000 years. And the Rambam wandered from place to place with his father, looking for a place of menucha. So the Rambam talks from very personal experience. He writes in his letters as well that people should not stay in such a place. So the Shaila was raised in recent times. Does one have to run away from society or not? So the Chazon Ish and the Brisk HaRav each had their own take. Chazon Ish said the Melon Orchem are the yeshivas, the places that we go to learn Torah. There we keep the world at bay, and we make sure there's an extreme degree of Torah within the yeshivas. The Brisk HaRav of Elul Zatzal said that our own houses, that's the midbar, that's the Mokum Plato. Our own house has to be a place of purity. From our own house has to shine forth the light of Torah. And that's really the principle way. How do we transmit our midor dor? Everything else is ultimately secondary. Shul is secondary. Important. Yeshiva is secondary. What's primary is the home. That which we learned in our own home, that which our children learn in our home. That's primary. That's the transmission of Torah. Right? We didn't come to yeshiva to learn with an Isur of Bosa v'Cholov, to learn that you have to eat kosher, to learn the Shabbos, that is Yontif. The details, yeah, exactly. Now, what's all the details that they are? Yeah, that's true. But the notions? A Jewish home, one grows up with that. That's the primary transmission of Torah. And perhaps that's why in Chanukah, as Alochom Nerishu Beisam. Stress, that where's our strength? Hashem Oiz the Amo Yitain. Oiz is Torah. Where's the Oiz? Where's our strength? Our strength is in our home and our family. Perhaps that's why Chanukah, of all the mitzvahs, has this unique thing. That one person lights and everybody's yaitzeh. Stress the significance of bias in the house. The problem is, in halacha, what happens if we're not in a house when this man, Hadlogos Neros, comes? And that's increasingly a problem in today's world. Shverzel was angezund in Williamsburg at a shochan, Mordechai Friedman, all over Shalom. Mordechai Friedman was a sheichet for the Satmar Rebbe in Satmar. And, you know, I once mentioned the was angezund to Eugene Gluck. Eugene comes from Satmar. So Eugene says, yeah, I remember him, he was Makura with the Satmar Rebbe before the war, that he was already Makura with the Rebbe. So he died, I don't know, in the last 10 years about something like that. He was between 101 and 104. Nobody even knew already how old he was, you know. He had lived so long that he had, you know, there was his own children, no one knew any longer how old he was. So he was an old-time Jew. An old-time Jew. So he was born, you know, in 1900 about, late 1890s. his day worked very simply. When it was light, he was up. At night, he slept. He was a shaykhet, he was a boydek, he spent a lot of time learning, an entire year, a very nice person. But you can hear it, the wee hours of the morning, if it was the sun, if it was light, he was up. At night, dark, he didn't hear a pin drop. Not a bad way. He lived in deep into his 90s, he was walking to shul every day. Outside Yom, if he went to shul. But he had an attendant the last few years, you know, to take him down. He'd go down, you know, for Shachwas and then for Menchamar, for I used to meet him. But deep into his 90s, he was going on his own power, walking down to Safa Besmerish every day. So, you know, when you live in that lifestyle, so when it comes nighttime, you're home. When it comes, you know, it's time to light, you're home already. But that's not in our world. You know, typically the Zman for Adlokas Neiros is approximately 5 o'clock. It will take a little, but it's always right around 5 o'clock. And 5 o'clock, I mean, the business day is just barely beginning. He's thinking about coming home yet at 5 o'clock. You know, and in the case you ever finish your work today, that Baruch Hashem, we have a worldwide system of trading, that some stock market is opening on the other end of the world that affects everything that you do. And you have to watch what they're up to, the currency trading, you know, what's happening to your company's portfolio. So in case you ever finish your work here, there's some new tiger to worry about in the middle of the night. So we really need to know when we have to light. Now, the aleph we have to start off with is like this. Fortunately for us, the Balei Tosfos made a major revolution. A major revolution. And the Rambam incorporated it l'halacha. In the Gemara we find the following, that if a person lives, he should normally light an Eres Chanukah at the doorway of his house. If he lives upstairs, so he puts it in the window. And finally, let's say it's B'Shas Sakona. B'Shas Sakona does not necessarily mean to live in a place where your life is in danger for lighting Neros Chanukah. But even Rashi talks about the fact in the Gemara on Shabbos, the Zoroastrians on their holidays did not allow anyone to light any light except in their temples. And they weren't like in Saudi Arabia. They sent around the police. And, you know, if you didn't obey the rules, they whipped you. So it wasn't Sakonis the Foshes, but it was nasty. There have been Yeruchim rights. It might be that you can't put your menorah outside because people will steal your menorah at the Talmud of the Rosh. Whatever the varied vicissitudes of life are. So, Shah Sakona Menicho al Shulchono Radayah. We put it on a table inside the house. It's invisible outside. We die, and that suffices. So the Shaila is, the Gemara says that we light Neros Chanukah when we shetishka achama shetichle regel marashak. From sunset or nightfall, there's two variations of the Rambam, what tishka achama is. And as we know, there's a mean the beginning of sunset, and when the sun finally disappears and all the refracted light disappears, this is a consuming subject in Shas, what Shkia Sachama means. Achatich l'regam rashuk, and the Gemara spells out Shuka the Tarmudoi. Who were the last ones out in an era when there was no exterior illumination? Outdoor illumination. Who were the last ones out at night? Right? The wood dealers. What did you need at night? You needed to cook your supper. And you needed to have a little bit of heat. So the last ones to hang around on the way home from business, you know, you had to make sure you grabbed another extra pack of wood, you know, to make it through the night. So they were the last ones to leave. So once Achatich L'Regel Meshukah the Tarmudoi, when they closed up, it was closed. There was nobody in sight anymore. So that was this month. Gemara's two shyness to what it means. Is that how much oil you have to put in? Is that the ilo adlik madlik? If you haven't lit, you can still light. Gemara's two terutz. Now what happens, let's just take the terutz, the ilo adlik madlik, that you can light up until that time. Now, what happens if you move the whole scene indoors? So, am I limited still by the Zman of Tichle Rego Marashuk? Meaning that in this construct of lighting indoors, all they did is they just changed the venue. Instead of being outdoors, it's indoors. But everything else is the same about it, with the same parameters. Or no. Once they instituted the din of Tichle, of Menicha al Shulchan Ubedayo, well, listen, within that context, if you just looked at it on its own, not globally, what would be the point of Tichle Regel and Ashuk? Nobody's going to see it anyhow. So it allows us to have an entirely different construct with a different time frame. Not driven by when people are outside, perhaps driven when people are inside. So how do we understand the Gemara? So Tosfos, in fact, is Mesupik. That's two terutzim in Tosfos, in Bava Medrika. Whether the limitation of the din of Menicha al Shulchan Ubedayo is the sole change in the din, but otherwise they kept the same construct, the light plut, the construct is one construct for everyone. Wherever you light it, this is the time you light. Oh no, once they moved it indoors, it became laissez-faire. That it depends, each, every man for himself. In my house, they're home at 5 o'clock. In your house, they're home at 11. They're on someone else's home at 10. Whenever they gather, that's when you light. So the Ramah records the halacha that one is not limited by Tichle Rego Marashuk. He says, nevertheless, it's best to light at Tzeitzik HaChol. So that, I believe, is because of the Shita, the Rosh Hashulchan's interpretation. I cannot understand any other interpretation of that than the Shita in Tosfos, that even Bizman HaZem, one should light at Tzeitzik HaChol. So therefore, the Ramah says, the best thing to do, if you can, is to light at Tzeitz. If you can't, so light later. So that's the very Aleph.
But that Tzeitzik HaChol is for those who are lighting indoors, you mean? Or
even for those lighting indoors, yes. Because that's in accordance with one third and Tosfos. That they didn't make it an entirely new construct.
Right, they just kept
the general construct is the same. And this detail is variable. Yes.
Now that we have street lights and electric lights available and people are walking in the streets even in their control at all times, does that affect in any way the halacha for people who are...
Yeah, it's a very good question. In other words, the fact that there's outdoor illumination and life tends to move to who knows what hour outside.
They never sleep.
Right? Does that affect the Tichle Rego Marashuk? And I believe the answer to that question is no. That Chazal made a takona, and that remains. And the reason I believe it's no is because we find straight through all the Achrayim, everyone calls it, the Rif said it's Chatzi Shah. There were an awful lot of societal changes from the time of the Rif until our time. And yet, we don't find in the Achrayim variations. You know, large cities, urban areas developed. You know, there's certain
gas lamps from us 400 or 500 years ago.
What?
You've had gas lamps already for 400 or 500 years.
Okay, so you know. So we don't see reflected in the Achrayim. Everyone's still quoting the Rif. So my personal view is that it didn't change. And because of that, it made a very big chumra for me. In Eretz Yisrael, I was always makpid to light bizman. I never lit late in Eretz Yisrael for this reason.
It's hard to do because you have to go to a late matter.
Whatever, but I always lit bizman. The one time I remember I was at the Kaisel, I went to see the Hadlokas Neiris. And I made it, the race home from the Kaisel. Yeah, we made it, which is the Shalim, I think, that I ride, they light right after Shkia,
right.
Especially at the Kaisel.
Yeah,
but in Yerushalayim Bechlal, in Gulas, they also light right at Shkia, Kishitas Aramba. So we took the bus back, we raced home, we made it like 2 minutes before the Zman, I made it home to Bechavit, and we lit many years ago. So, fortunately, we have the Rambam. So we don't have to be worried that we have to leave work at 4 o'clock. You know, for a week, to light the nearest Hanukkah. Now, when is the most appropriate time to light? So let's consider it from two standpoints. I mean, if I have the best option available, I could light whenever I want, and my family is all together, so about 25 minutes after Shkia is the best time to light. Usually this time it's approximately 5 minutes to 5. I can't tell you exactly, but at this time of the year it's usually right around 5 to 5. 25 minutes after Shkia. That's a pretty good estimation, because the Shkia tends to be 4:30-ish Hanukkah time. And it does not really move for a good number of weeks from around 4:30. What does the BlackBerry have to say?
Okay.
We have it there on the phone.
4:28 is the earliest.
And it stays that way for quite a while, right in that area.
Right, the whole month of December, so all shops all the same time.
Yeah, so that's it. So that's it.
November 15th to January 15th.
The time changes in the morning. The first night of Hanukkah, Shkia is at 4:29.
Okay. It's not going to vary too much. So that's it. Usually about 5 to 5. It's, if you light it 5 to 5, why do I say 5 to 5? Because then you yaitse according to all shitas. According to the shitas that you should light at Shkia Sacham at sunset, it's still within a half an hour of that. And it's close to Tzeis HaKochavim already. According to some shitas, it's already Tzeis HaKochavim at that time. So it's about the best time you could conceivably light. Now, that's assuming all things being equal. Everyone's home, can light at that time, etc. Now, what happens if some people are home and some are not? You're home, your wife's not home. Your wife's home, you're not home. So the Iker's man to light this man says when the family's together. That's the main time for lighting, whenever that will happen to be. So there's a lot of flexibility, just in practical terms. And it may even vary from day to day.
Only happens on Friday night, the family's together.
So,
you don't do 25 minutes of
the rest of the week together.
So, your wife?
Yeah. Sunday night, you would do it.
Don't give out the Hanukkah guilt until after the rest.
Friday night either.
So, if a wife is home and a husband's not home, or vice versa, they should wait until they're both together. And then they should light. So this is, in terms of time, when one should light. Now, where should one light? That's even a much more difficult question than when one should light. Now, let's be clear where one shouldn't light. It's a lot easier that way. If you have a family Hanukkah party on presumably the Motzei Shabbos, or especially Sunday during Hanukkah, and it's very likely that this Malach Lokas Neiros is going to arrive sometime in the middle of this event. So you have to light the Neiros Hanukkah. But who can light the Neiros Hanukkah there? Only the people that actually reside in the place where the party is taking place. All the rest of the people cannot light there. Because the halacha is Neir Yishu Beisai. It has to be in your house. The Taz has a phenomenal moshul, an analogy. And he says, if I'm invited for dinner in your house, and I eat, and I light Neiros Hanukkah there, that would be the equivalent of lighting Neiros in Rosh Hashanah, in the park bench. Just that the park bench is not your house, and everyone understands you can't light there. So your house is not my house either, I can't light in your house. So this is the first thing that we need to clarify. You know, The menorahs have a place. They're not orphaned. They don't just wander around the face of the earth. Ultimately, they have to wind up in what's considered our residence. Now, there are all different levels of residence. There's permanent residence, temporary residence, but it has to be a residence. So someone else's house, even if it's my brother or my father, is not my house. Now, beyond that, it's an obvious extension of that. If you have a bar mitzvah or a chasana during Hanukkah, one may not light the nearest Hanukkah in the hall. It's not your house. So this is where the halacha begins. And the fact that we light in a Beis HaKnesses, that's really a din which doesn't come from the Gemara, and it's a very specialized minhag, and was created for a very specialized purpose. In the history of Neiros Hanukkah, we find three different types of scenarios. We find ages of either Jewish sovereignty or great religious tolerance, and then people commonly lit the menorahs outside. We find times which people were not so tolerant on Eves. It wasn't terrible, but it was far from great. So that was already in the tourist time, in the 14th century in Spain. They lit the menorahs at the doorway, not actually outside, but it was still visible. It was sort of inside, but the door was open and you could still see the menorah. But outside they didn't light to it. And then we find that the 16th century Krakow of the Ramah, you would have thought that Hanukkah is Pesach. The menorahs became by Yeroba Yemotzi. You know, outside they didn't see a zecher of a menorah in the Ramah's Krakow. You like the Fnimamash. He says this in two different places in the Dark English. Why? Because the Polish anti-Semitism was such that you just could not, it was not tolerable to light outside anymore, even visible outside. So there were all different, you know, possibilities of where one could light. Now, apparently what happened in the time the Rav Osh writes this, in his time, or the era just preceding his, he was a Talmud of the Ran, they went from outdoor lighting to indoor lighting. And they were perturbed by this. Why? Because they were the opposite of maskil. The exact opposite. The maskil's battle cry was, "Have a Yehudi b'bayit, the ben adam b'rachov." Be a Jew at home and a mensch in the street. Our forebears did not have that sheet. They believed that their religion was important enough that it should be in the Rishus HaRabim too. Doesn't have to be hidden behind closed doors.
Keep kosher home.
So, what did they wish to do? So they wanted, now that they could no longer put the menorahs in a place where they were visible outside, so they were disturbed. The public aspect of the Persumanisa lapsed. Now the Persumanisa became very private. We live, fortunately, in a very unique moment in Jewish history. That we can put our menorahs in the window. And if we want, we can even put them outside. Not that I'm saying that it's not chiyuv to put them outside, but we could.
I know of a story, a friend of mine, whose daughter was living in Montana, and she put her menorah in her window, and so we threw a rock.
Yeah, listen, it doesn't surprise me. Middle America is Middle America. Yeah, it's less likely to happen here for other reasons. Because after he does it, he has to escape with his life, you know. And there are enough Jews here to wreak havoc on a guy to try such a thing. So, Baruch Hashem, we don't normally, let's say it could happen, but it doesn't normally happen. Well, so what did they do? And this is very interesting. So in the Sephardic lands, they started a minhag to light in the Beis HaKnesses, so there should be a public aspect to the Pursuma Nisa. And they did something which we're not even sure historically why they did and how they pulled it off. They instituted the recitation of the brochas, not only the lighting, but to give it real impact, they made the brochas too. Now, the Sephardic tradition is that one does not make a brocha on a minhag. Ashkenazim make brochas on minhagim, and Sephardim don't. So according to the Sephardic tradition, how did they enact the brochas on the Neres Chanukah? And we do not have a simple answer to that question. I don't know if we have any known and well-known answer to that question. This question was already raised by the Chacham Tzvi, who had a unique window on this, because the Chacham Tzvi was, as they used to call him, Tzvi Ashkenazi. He was an Ashkenazic Rov in Amsterdam with a Sephardic Kehillah. So the cross currents of the two are very, very well known to him. And he writes in his Tshuvas that he does not understand on what basis the Sephardim are making a brocha, and he leaves it as an open question. But this is what took place. And that's why it was done. But this minhag is unique. It's limited to a Beis HaKnesses. Now, we light in other public forums. You know, if we have a huge Hanukkah party and everyone comes together, so we light the Neres Hanukkah in such a place. But we do not recite the brocha in such a place. There's no basis for that. There's no din in the Gemara, nor is there a minhag. So when we have these public menorah lightings in the streets of New York, it's an extremely dubious proposition, to be kind about it, the recitation of the brocha on the light. It's their business. But a brocha has no place.
Light and base consists like during chakras the next morning. So was that also starting that time? Or that
no, it must have started afterwards. The lighting of chakras is a combination of two reasons in reality. It's on one end, it's the idea when there's a gathering of people in Chanukah, we light Neres even without a brocha to be a farce in the nest.
It's like a public gathering.
But there's another aspect to it too, which I personally believe, that I believe it's in the Shadrach Shuvah's Binyan Shloima, from Shloima the Vilna. Zecher Tzadik L'Vracha also says the same thing. There's a Shaila what Hadlokas HaNeres is. Hatovas HaNeres. What is Hatovas HaNeres? Most Rishonim learn that Hatovas HaNeres means that the Kohen showed up in the morning and he cleaned away the debris of last night's lighting, the leftover, the leftover pieces of the wick, and the oil, whatever, he cleaned away the debris, and they cleaned it up, it has to be lit again tonight. That was Hatovas HaNeres. The Rambam has a very different idea, and this is a whole question, where, whatever, of Yoshever, Zatzal spoke at length about this, where the Rambam took this idea from. Because it's obviously not... there's no Gemara which clearly indicates such a thing, when all the Rishonim were against it. The Rambam, Shita, Tovas HaNeres, is that the Kohen came in the morning, and any of the Neres that went out, he relit them, and gave them enough fuel to burn until the night. So in case they burned out more rapidly, so he added extra oil to them, and they were supposed to basically burn straight through. But, you know, some may go out, you know, sometimes the wick eats a little thicker, there's a little bit more air, it eats the fuel a little faster, whatever, for whatever reason. So anything that goes out, it comes in the morning, he straightens it, and he relights it to burn all the way until the night, until the Kohen is going to come again to light. That's the Bam of Shita Latovas HaNeres. Now, based on that, there's an Indian of lighting the Neres again in the morning. So the minhag is also rooted in Shita Sarambam. That was the Rambam Shita and Hatovas HaNeres, that when the Kohen came in the morning, if the Neres are out, he relight the Neres. And that comes, it's a combination of both of those factors.
And
Rambam was before they instituted this other verse. They would light it even beforehand.
According to the Rambam, this is a din in the Mikdash. It's nothing to do with
Hanukkah. So I'm saying, even before they started lighting the Beis Knesset in order to make sure that there was a public lighting, did they light it at Marv anyway to have a public...
I don't know if they bothered in those days. It does not seem that they had any, that they lit it in shul at all.
Once they lit it in shul, so they started doing...
So once they lit it in shul, so then they, you know, they went to town. And we light it. It's lit at night and in the day, both. So that is a lyric which is limited to the Beis HaKnesses. I don't. It seems the basis that we have, even the Ramok, everyone quotes the Rivosh. It looks like it started in their countries. Kabil HaEmes Memishon. They enacted it for a reason, and unfortunately, the reason became relevant in Ashkenazi circles. The solution was a very elegant solution to a difficult problem.
If you have a minion factory, like Rishita Kesatora has a bunch of minion and Kamara, do they have to light at each minion?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I would presume. I don't think the minion gets to light, keep relighting. You know, if you want, get a big amount of oil and light it, that it should, you know, burn for a long time. But I don't think there's anything that you have to relight it. You light once and that's all.
So that would also, let's say, here when you light Marv, you light before Marv?
Rather.
Because Marv, it's not after Mincha, it's the beginning of Marv.
The idea that they lit after Mincha was that people stayed in Shul until after Marv. It was Pursuma Nisa. So whatever it is, whenever you come to Shul, you light.
So if there's a here you share at 8:30, we light before the Shir?
No, we light right before the davening.
Right before davening.
Why? Because that's one, the maximum amount of people here. Yeah. What? In halacha, it's important to know there were two types of constructs. You have them in Shas as well. You have real stories, things that actually happened. Someone came and he had a shayla and he came to the Rav and the Rav gave him a psak. And Shas has no shortage of such stories. Beyond that, there are theoretical constructs which are created to demonstrate certain points, to bring out certain points. Yoshaber, Tzal said, even some of them are created not because they're ever going to happen. That wasn't the purpose. They're created merely to bring out the underlying principles of the halacha by creating some weird case which highlights an aspect of the lumness of what drives the halacha. So Chazal made a construct which, not that they ever thought it's going to happen, but the artificial construct served a practical purpose of illuminating the principles of the halacha.
Secretion of Yamas.
What?
Secretion of Yamas.
So, that's a real thing.
You cut off the head of the chicken?
So, why do I mention this? When one studies halacha, one has to know if we're dealing with a real time case or a theoretical construct. In a theoretical construct, then every detail should be important, otherwise what's it doing? In a real-time case, life is not so elegant. It's the way it is. It presents itself with a whole mass of facts, some which may be relevant to the outcome, many which are not relevant to the outcome, but they're all part of the story. And this generated a great deal of confusion in Hilchos Chanukah. Because the world did not stop to realize that the case that the Prichodesh discusses was not a theoretical construct, it was a real-time case. Someone came to the Prichodesh, the Rav of Yerushalayim, 260 years ago, and asked him the following shayla. He goes away for all 8 days of Chanukah to a Shre. You think they only come for Pesach, Rani, yeah? It's a hekish of Shmoyla Shmoyla. 8 days of Pesach, 8 days of Hanukkah. So that's it. They're here for the Hanukkah saying the two.
So they only did
7 days of Pesach. Yeah. So Kitzah Haram, so he wanted to know if he has to, where he has to light Neiris Hanukkah. So the Pichodesh told him to light where the place that he's staying. So there are some that took this. If you stay for all 8 days, then you have to, light in that place. But anything short of 8 days, they have difficulties with. But they did not realize. They did not realize that this was just a practical case. What happened? Aloha l'maisa, if one sleeps in a place, even for a night, one should light the Neiris Hanukkah in that place. So, the halacha states the following, that eating a meal in someone's house is not considered that that's your residence. We eat meals in a lot of places. We eat meals in restaurants, with guests. Where they let you take your shoes off and put your head down, that's a residence. Even if it's for one night. So, if a person's away, you go away for Shabbos Chanukah, so you light in the place that you sleep. Now, what do you do Motzi Shabbos? You're going to go home. So I was here for Shabbos, and I'm here at this man. So where do I light? Here or where I go home? So here we find really two very interesting things, and I believe they're not in conflict with each other. In the basic lomdis should be that it is man hadloka. I'm in this place. This is my residence. So here I am, Motzi Shabbos. I'm still wherever I was for Shabbos Chanukah. I have to light here. That should be the simple approach. I always believed it to be the case, and I subsequently discovered that Rav Nissen Alper, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, this is one of his big chidushim in Hilchos Chanukah that he loved. Then I found out that Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, says that if you're going home, you should light at home. You shouldn't light in the place that you were in for Shabbos. And this is a page he borrowed from the halachas of Neiris Shabbos, that if I have a temporary residence or a permanent residence is at least in theory, not always practically, but in theory a permanent residence is a better place to light. And Neiris Shabbos, Rav Moshe did not want people to light at home if they're not staying home, even if they would stay home part of the time. Because he felt that bizmanenu, that we're not used to really taking care of open flames, is an element of sakana, and that Eretz should not be left unattended. So if he was eating out Friday night, he wanted people to light in the place that they were going to, and not leave the Eretz unattended at home. But in theory, if I choose between two equal places, I should choose my permanent place of residence over my temporary place of residence. So for example, let's say part of the family is going out and part of the family is staying home Friday night. And you should light at home. Light in your permanent residence, and the nearest are not unattended, or someone else, a guest, is staying in the house, is not going with us. So you should light at home, not where you're going. So Rav Moshe took a page out of that section of the Shulchan Aruch, and he applied it to Neiris Chanukah too. That in Neiris Chanukah, there's an advantage to your permanent house over your temporary house. So if you're going home on Shabbos, so light at home. So I added a Bamed Dvarim Amurim to that. I qualified it. I said that both dinim are true. The din that one may light where one was for Shabbos, the Norwegian did not disagree with it. The idea is a preference in my permanent residence, also true. Now, however, suppose I'm not going home right away when Shabbos ends. There's a Hanukkah party in this place where I was, or I'm going to get to a third place. that I will not my home, not where I was for Shabbos, and I'm going to be at the Hanukkah party there on Shabbos, and then I'm first going to come home. You know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, what should I do? So then borrowly that I should light the nearest Hanukkah where I was for Shabbos. For Moshe's din should only be applied in a situation when I'm relatively leaving quickly and going home. Then I should light when I get home. But if I'm not going home rather quickly, either I'm staying here for a good few hours where I was for Shabbos, I'm going into a third place before I go home, then I should certainly light the nearest Hanukkah in the place that I spent Shabbos. Now let me add just one further point. That sometimes you have guests coming for Shabbos Hanukkah, and you don't have enough room in the house for them. There's not enough room for all the guests. So if you're fortunate, your next door neighbor went to Hishver for Shabbos Hanukkah, so you have use of his house. So now, your guests that are sleeping next door, what are they like? Would I sleep or would I eat? So here I felt that they should light in the place that they eat. Why? Because they came to you for Shabbos Hanukkah. That's really their residence. Now they're going to spend the whole day with you, which when they finally decide to go to sleep, that they're going to go next door. But they're not going to hang out for hours next door. They came to visit you. So the kfiyus is in your house. There's no place for them to sleep, so they sleep in the next building. But the kfiyus, the place of residence for Shabbos, is with you.
Can I play Shabbos candles also?
That's for sure. Shabbos candles, without any doubt, they should light in your house and not in their house. Yes, Ron, you seem puzzled.
No, I'm just thinking what happened to us in the New Year's Stroll. So you're in a hotel for...
A hotel is a residence.
But you can't light... If you don't light in your room, can you light... They set up a table by the dining room, outside the dining room, which is in the lobby of the hotel.
It's hard to say. You know, it's really far from the best place to light.
Best place would be in your own room?
Yes.
But do you see this light in the dining room?
Shiva's light in the dining room, remember, the Bochrum live in the whole building. The building, let's realize one thing about a yeshiva. The nature, Ramesha, first of all, was not so happy about that. But most yeshivas, in fact, do light in the dining room area. And that's because about 50 years back, in fact, there was a fire in Tel's yeshiva, whatever. I don't know if it was in Hanukkah or not. I think it may have been in whatever. A couple of Bochrum died in a fire or whatever. So the yeshivas have been very, very strict about this. But there's another aspect of the halacha too. A yeshiva, it's run by the Rosh Yeshivas, but to whom does it actually belong? But whom does it belong? By the people. All the people that give the money to the yeshiva are for the sake of the Bochum and yeshiva. And as Rabbi Yosef told me once, Shaila, that was in a different area of halacha, but it touched the use of a building owned by a yeshiva. So he said, the first thing we have to determine is if, according to Hilchos Tzedakah, the directors of the yeshiva have a right to make such a decision. If they do, he says, then we can go further. So he said, the people that give the money give it for the sake of the Bochrum. So as long as the directors of the yeshiva are serving the needs of the Bochrum, they have a right to do what they're doing. If they're not acting in a manner which serves the right of the Bochum, in fact, they have no right, they're just Gaboy Tzedakah. They have no right to use the money in the building for anything else. So in effect, we're really saying that the real buyer, the people that live in the yeshiva, I mean, it's their building. And in a functional sense, it's their building. I mean, everyone else that runs it is merely a Gaboy Tzedakah. You know, we can't have a Keres, so somebody has to be in charge. So we put somebody in charge. But he has very strict rules about what he has to do. So in a certain regard, the Bochum really, the whole building is theirs, you know.
Don't tell
them. Can't believe me, they know it. Oh, Rabbi said, there's no shit next week. I have a chasana next week.